So you don't get listeriosis. Good morning. I'm Bill Radke. Welcome to the Week in Review, summarizing for you in 1 hour what you missed in the last week, and in fact, in the last year in this case. My guests for the Week in Review, Knut Berger, Joni Balter, and Luke Burbank. Welcome, everybody, and Happy New Year.
Hey,
Good
Bill.
Good morning. Happy New Year.
Hey, Bill.
We've got this gun background check law being challenged in a lawsuit. Could parts of this law get overturned in a lawsuit? We'll talk about that in a few minutes. We'll talk about how the Puget Sound area changed in 2014 and what might be ahead this year. But do you mind if we start with ice cream? Because I know this is not the legislative session or medical marijuana licensing, but I didn't know that Molly Moon gets its ice cream from the same place as Fred Meyer. Am I the only one who had this reaction?
No, I was shocked. Shocked as well.
Yeah, so the state has shut down a company called Snoqualmie Gourmet Ice Cream after it was linked to an outbreak of listeria contamination. Just a warning here. In the next few minutes, we're going to talk about white grime, black slime, and hair-like growth. First of all, do you buy Snoqualmie Ice Cream? You can get it at QFC and Red Apple.
Well, I like you, Bill, didn't realize how many different ice cream stores and companies use some part of this process. All the way up here in Port Townsend, Washington, we have an ice cream shop that had to get all of their ice cream out of there because of being connected to
Wow.
this company. So I'm just only eating Froyo to be safe Mm-hmm. for probably the next, I don't know, 2 or 3 months. This is the thing about listeria, though. Does this make me callous when I look up the symptoms of listeria? It doesn't sound that bad. I'm on the CDC website right now.
Yeah.
A person with listeriosis usually has a fever and muscle aches, sometimes preceded by diarrhea or other gastrointestinal symptoms. I call that Tuesday.
Oh, really? I'm sorry to hear that.
This is not like E. coli, right? I mean, this is not something that's actually... Is it that dangerous? Am I misunderstanding it?
It's one of those things that it's bad for really vulnerable people, like so many of these things.
Well, what I would say is...
If you're a baby, if you're infirm. Yes, Joni.
But just the idea that the folks went in there and they saw all the things you mentioned, grime and slime and all these other really frightening things, and they said, yeah, keep going. Not quite. You're doing a heck of a job, Brownie, but keep making ice cream for a while, even after they saw all this. It seems to me that the threshold for scary stuff should be, fixed, because that isn't that shouldn't be going on.
Right. The Seattle Times reported they failed a health inspection. This plant is in Snohomish. They failed the inspection more than 2 months before it got shut down. And this is where I learned, reading about this, that this company sends, as Luke suggested, by the way, Luke joins us from the small maritime village of Port Angeles
this morning. It's the KUOW Olympic Peninsula.
Yes. Sorry.
Peninsula Bureau.
And you're the chief of that bureau, correct?
Yes, I'm in charge.
So this company sends 1,000 gallons a day to Fred Meyer, Safeway, QFC, PCC, Albertsons, Met Market, Whole Foods, Molly Moon, Husky Deli, Full Tilt, Space Needle. It's all the same stuff, and it has black hairy residue.
Well, I like you, Bill, I was just surprised because you think of Molly Moon as this kind of mecca of, like, Seattle is doing to ice cream what it's done to cupcakes and coffee and whatnot with this kind of artisanal type of thing. And then to find out, well, they're getting their ice cream from where everybody else gets their ice cream is kind of a brand shock.
But you and I think that, and then neither of us has been inside.
That's right. Neither of us eats it. No,
so
it's totally...
And artisanal, watch that word, would you please? That is so overdone.
I've been to Molly Moon. Delicious. And I have the same feeling, like, oh, this is the real stuff.
Yeah, it's definitely a summertime tradition to go wait outside of Molly Moon's for 3 to 4 hours to get some ice cream, which may or may not give you the runs. I don't want to sound like a broken record with this, because I know I downplayed what felt to me like the danger of listeria, but I also was not that shocked to hear this is what it's like in a giant food processing factory, essentially. Like, I feel like if you've ever worked in one of these places, as I have briefly, or if you've ever been around them, there's a lot of this stuff. This was less scary than I expected it to be.
I had the exact same reaction. I mean, really, just to tell you, apparently what they found was in October, deteriorating floors, excessive dust, So far, we're at my house. Dried flaking residue, check. Then it got a little more serious. Black residue on metal carts, mold on a bucket for water. No, we're still at my house. Standing water in a walk-in cooler, flies, male workers without facial hair protection. Then in December, it was white grime on fan grates, black slime outside a walk-in cooler, and black buildup and hair-like growth on multiple milk crates.
So when you get to the black slime, the mold, that is, and I'm sorry about what happens at your house. Mm. You know, we can work on that. But that is when you start to worry about really what is getting into ice cream, which, you know, who loves ice cream? Kids, vulnerable list. What are you going to do?
And by the way, if you're not worried because you only buy Pink's ice cream at Wajamaya because you love their black sesame and green tea and mango and red bean, spicy ginger, taro and Thai tea, it's the same ice cream. It's from Snoqualmie Gourmet Ice Cream in Snohomish, which makes me think that, you know, and I've thought of this before, that whatever food you think is amazing and special, it's probably mostly in your mind, isn't it? I'm thinking of this with Paseo, the big deal people made over, yes, ham is good, but it's not that distinctive.
One significant thing is it's a Snohomish ice cream maker, but they named it Snoqualmie.
Yeah.
You know, because I guess Snohomish, you know, conjures up. How about Everett? You know,
yeah.
I mean, they
essence of Everett.
Something we that sounds a little more romantic.
Yeah.
But the detail that stuck out to me, Bill, was the lack of covering facial hair on male employees.
Mm-hmm.
First of all, what about the female employees?
Yes.
I mean, let's not just confine this to the dudes.
Can we get some reciprocity up in here?
But the other thing is, like, I feel like, are all people in food service who are guys with beards, are they supposed to be wearing some kind of food
burqa? Have you ever been to Costco?
I've never seen that
before. Have you been to Costco? Oh. They cover it. Go to the Costco hot dog.
No, I went on when you go to the manufacturing places, I took that tour of Theo's Chocolates in Fremont.
Uh-huh.
They make you wear a little beard diaper. You know,
really?
It hangs, it's like this white thing that, you know, covered my beard. It was really weird walking around with it. You know, I mean, you kind of forget it's there after a while, but it looks really ridiculous.
Well, once everybody's wearing the beard diaper, then everybody's wearing it, then it makes you feel a little more comfortable.
Right.
Right.
The economic impact on everything created in Portland is going to be profound if they have to start rocking beard diapers down there. I do a radio show based out of Portland, and there's not one person working anywhere who's not covered in a beard.
Yeah, but think of the money you could make designing artisanal beard diapers or whisker cover-ups. You know, like this one's for mutton chops, this one's for handlebar mustaches, and just turn it into a statement.
Did you hear about caramel apples as well at the same time, Listeria, mm-hmm. bacteria, and caramel apples, which they're saying they shouldn't sit on the shelf so long? Like, why is anyone eating caramel apples this long after Halloween, and why are any adults eating them, period? And they come in a packet. These are, like, they're in plastic. Would you buy a caramel apple?
There's definitely an age at which eating a caramel apple is rolling the dice on your teeth. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's true.
40% chance of a visit to the dentist right after.
Exactly. It's like it's perfectly designed not only to break a tooth, but to pull it out.
Right. If you like your dentist, eat a caramel apple.
Also hard on your beard. Okay, so as for this plant in Snohomish, they are sterilizing everything in the plant, and they have a new flavor, banana bleach. We are coming back on the Week in Review in a moment. How is the Puget Sound area different from the way we found it a year ago? That's coming up. Stay tuned. KUOW's Week in Review with Joni Balter, Knute Berger, Luke Burbank, and I'm Bill Radke. And before we leave it, we got a helpful reminder from a listener, Matthew, who points out correctly that this dairy in Snoqualmie provides the pasteurized milk and sugar ice cream base without the flavor. So it's not the same as Molly Moon's. It's the generic base that goes out to all these places, and then they add the flavorings. Thank you, Matthew. Correct. still doesn't completely uncreep me, but it is correct.
They're just taking out all the fun stuff. It's like caramel apples, ice cream. Next are going to be like dreams. Those have listeria now. And rainbows. Don't trust those.
Bunnies and puppies. Coming up on the Week in Review in a week, I just want to point out that you, the listener, have a chance to come down to Pioneer Square and join us because we're going to do this show live from Pioneer Square with the usual, you know, look back at the week's top stories, but we're going to talk Bertha and Tunnel and Waterfront in the bigger picture. We're going to have former Seattle Mayor Charles Royer there, who's involved in the waterfront restoration. We're going to argue, I hope, about whether it's too Disney-fied. And it's all going to happen at the Matt Dillon Cafe, Little London Plain. And maybe he'll create a Bertha cocktail. I don't know. But it's going to be free and open to the public. So come and join us. Seating is limited. First come, first serve. So don't get there any later than about a quarter to 10 so you can get a refreshment and settle in before we're live on the air on the Week in Review a week from today. Now, we are telling you, as we do each week, what you ought to know about the week gone by. And this week, gun rights activists filed a federal lawsuit against parts of Washington State's new gun background check law, Initiative 594. So we're going to tell you what the lawsuit's about and whether it stands a chance in a moment. But the first gun story I want to tell you about, in case you haven't heard, is this a two-year-old child shot and killed his mother at a Walmart just across the Washington border in Hayden, Idaho. The mom apparently had a concealed weapons permit from Spokane. The sponsor of Initiative 594 wrote on Facebook that, hey, a zippered purse does not constitute safe storage of a loaded gun. Do any of you feel like or believe that this shooting in Idaho has anything to do with 594 in your mind?
Well, in the big, broad, huge sense of discussing what is gun safety, of course it fits into that discussion.
Even though she had a concealed weapons permit.
She had a concealed weapons permit, and she had a new, brand new from the Christmas giving season, a purse that had a zippered area, as I understand it, to store that. But that said, and this is, look, you got to start by saying this is a huge tragedy. This is clearly an accident.
Yeah.
A toddler getting into this zippered area and inadvertently taking the gun out, and somehow a strong toddler able to pull a trigger and shoot his mother. You have to say this is a tragedy. But that said, you know, there are some implications here. And what you have is, you know, the family of the woman who was killed, you know, was really upset for all the obvious reasons, but also the reason that folks were already talking about it being about gun safety. To which I say, how
and using it as to lobby for their stance on the issue.
Right. But they all said over there in Idaho that this family, they're gun people. They love to go shooting. They had concealed weapons permits. They took guns with them everywhere. But to say that it's not part of gun safety is, to me, like saying the families of the AirAsia crash can't say that crash has something to do with aviation safety.
But it's not about background checks, though.
No, I don't think so at all. And in the AirAsia case, you have family victims raising the issue as opposed to outside political figures using a personal tragedy to make a point. And I mean, I think it's, I just find it an unimaginable kind of tragedy. And these kinds of things happen with non-guns all the time. You know, kid pulls the brake off on a car that runs over dad or something. I mean, these things happen. It's just a terrible, terrible thing. And you can get into the details kind of after the fact about what the mother could have done. It's so easy to imagine why someone might be carrying a concealed weapon, particularly a woman. It's easy to imagine having a bunch, you know, she had other kids with her at the Walmart, getting distracted for a minute. Any parent of a child knows these things can happen in just the blink of an eye. And that's not to say that there isn't blame to assign in the case or in this incident. But I think my feeling is this is just something for the family that's going to have, you know, to work out. as opposed, I just am very uncomfortable with the way people want to hold it up as a single event, hold it up as you know, the poster child for the issue.
Well, I do think, though, that it is a single event, but it's part of a larger piece, which is how dangerous it is to have a ton of guns floating around in a society. And I think it's really easy to get kind of in the weeds on statistics with the guns in this country, and people will cherry pick the statistics that support their side of the argument. But here's something that I think we can all agree on, something that's pretty much inarguable. More guns in a society means more incidents related to guns. And to say that somehow that's not the case is it's like a town with 10,000 cars is going to have more car accidents. You just have more of the thing. And the idea that we need guns to protect ourselves from the other bad people with guns is like saying you need more cars so you can drive out of a car accident and avoid it. So I just think we should be realistic that a nation awash in guns is going to have a lot of incidents like this. And they're tragic, but that's the trade-off for having so many guns. And that's nothing to criticize this family. I just think we should be realistic about it.
It also seems, though, like especially the more and more we're able to surround ourselves and our news sources with just all people who agree with us, that we're not people who are in favor of gun control aren't seeking out those incidents where a homeowner defends his or her home, right? Or a crime is stopped because somebody had a gun. You know, we don't even handedly go and look for the examples.
Well, that's because those examples largely don't exist is part of the problem. I mean, honestly, like, I know we're not trying to have a gun control conversation, but I mean, this woman and her family clearly felt this was I can't speak for them, but I will say that when she went into that Walmart, the safety that she hoped that gun would provide her against somebody who wished her harm, that was not the case. It was instead an accidental shooting, which is very often the case. And I just think we should be honest about the rate at which those two different things happen.
I think we should be honest about that as guns, safe gun storage. Is a loaded gun in a purse that has a zipper, and she's there, remember, with four children. Is that safe enough? And I think we can have that discussion without assigning blame, but just saying, for the future, folks, what do you think about what really constitutes safe gun storage?
And that is a legislative, that's a political issue right now, right? They're talking about that in Washington State, about what how should we punish people who let a kid get a hold of a gun, right?
But yeah. This is one of the only issues, though, where like if there's a car, I mean, think about unsafe at any speed, or think about issues where they find out that a certain kind of car's accelerator sticks. We immediately say, well, what's the technological solution to this? This is one of the only cases where there's something that is potentially dangerous, but to even talk about trying to make it safer as a product gets into really murky and charged political waters.
Mm-hmm. Well, can I also add that when the Ebola outbreak, wrong word probably for the U.S., but when the Ebola hysteria came to the U.S. back in October, you know, the media and others went completely crazy over this. Two people have died in the U.S. over this. You know how many accidents there are like this involving guns? A bigger number.
Knut, do you have a short word before we tell people what this lawsuit's about that
well,
I promised?
We also could debate access to mental health, because that child, that two-year-old, is going to need some kind of support in the out years, given what happened. The tragedy is for the living here.
So this week, opponents expanded... Opponents of expanded gun background checks filed this federal lawsuit to block parts of the law. We're not going to spend a bunch of time on this, Joni, but will you give us some idea what this is about and whether this lawsuit stands a chance? Because you can't in the first year mess with an initiative. You can't ignore it or amend it.
You can't mess with an initiative except for by a 2/3 vote of the legislature. But this is asking of the courts to do something that the voters weren't in the mood to do.
So what do we need to know about this lawsuit?
So what you need to know about it is that the folks who were not happy with the vote on Initiative 594 have taken some of their concerns, especially about gun transfers, to the court to say that the law is too vague, it violates constitutional rights and a variety of other things. And they, you know, during the campaign, I remember them talking about, the example of somebody lending a hunting rifle to someone else and having to undergo a background check if the hunter that was being lent that that gun was leaving the person. In other words, if they were both going together, okay, mm-hmm. law says that's fine. But if you're going to go separate, you got to go get a background check. So now the examples that I read about had to do with, can you ship a gun and hand it to a FedEx carrier? What about unmarried people living together? Because the law talks rather specifically about you can transfer guns among family members. So this is sort of trying to weaken the law before a court, the legislature. There's no way you could get that through the legislature, seeing if a judge will go along and say that it's too vague or too big.
Is this getting – will a court look at this and say it's too vague, or just, look, any law regarding human behavior is going to be really – what do we mean by couple? What do we mean by emergency? How long does an emergency last? I mean, do you really think that that – trouble with this law is threatens it?
Well, okay, so the law's been in effect for a month and there's been zero issues about this. The only thing I know that's been an impact is that someone was stopped from buying a gun who wasn't supposed to.
Anything more on this lawsuit? Okay, other things about 2014, as we kiss it goodbye. What was the most important event to you that says something about the Puget Sound area in this last year? Luke?
Boy, I feel like I don't know if this is just a kind of a bunch of events or a bunch of incidents together, but I feel like trying to navigate Seattle has become historically impossible. And I mean, like, as you mentioned earlier, I'm out here in the KUOW Olympic Peninsula Bureau of Port Townsend, Washington, largely because my wife and I just couldn't handle setting aside an hour of our life to try to get along Mercer, you know, and other places that are impassable like that. And Danny Westneat has written some interesting pieces about the buses in South Lake Union. And to me, that is just, I mean, it's making the city largely unlivable.
It's draining it of creative people like Luke Burbank.
Well, that's not a huge loss.
I'm with you. That affects everybody. I mean, we all feel it. We all are living what Luke just discussed.
You know, that really that hit home to me when I looked at a list of the topics we discussed over the last year. And it's amazing how much we talk about transportation.
Yeah.
Bicycles, 520, pontoons, Bertha, Mercer, whatever. It was just it is like dominating the discussion of in many respects in the last year of public policy. And
pay by mile instead of a gas tax.
Exactly.
Zipper merge.
Are we going to get a transportation plan? Should we build a bridge to the Oregon?
Right.
I mean, it's just constant, and it's a huge thing, and it's a lot of the problem is so many of these projects are big and expensive, and then they also they're the whole angle of the lifestyle changes that it might require to have a city that's more livable, where people are driving less, et cetera, et cetera. The thing that struck me about 2014 is how many of the big top issues are still the big top issues for 2015. Last January, we were talking about Bertha, Ed Murray, and the Seahawks. I mean, it's...
Can you say that every year? The big issues don't disappear, or is this especially true this time?
Well, I think that... the fact that Bertha is still an issue is the story.
Yeah.
The fact that the Seahawks are doing well again this year
is the story.
Not necessarily predictable.
Still not funding public education story.
Yeah.
Right?
That's right. Yeah. Still don't have that plan to end homelessness.
Yeah.
May I say that a little more positively than that I'm struck by 2014, how much, and this is very parochial of me, so forgive me for all of this, how much Seattle and Washington State are setting the national agenda. Minimum wage, gun safety. You have other states trying to copy exactly what we've been talking about. 594 Nevada is trying to do that. And the whole pot thing, other states emulating. Alaska and Oregon and Nevada and California want to be up next. So we are trendsetters.
And we love that. Although at the same time, doesn't marijuana kind of have to go on your most overrated story of 2014? I mean, even though I have been riveted, I'm fascinated by legalizing this, you know, reefer madness. However, if you wanted to smoke it, you could, and now you still can, mostly not from stores. That's basically what this year's added up to in marijuana.
The punchline of the first story I ever wrote for Bloomberg was the big deal about legalizing recreational marijuana is that it'll be no big deal.
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Although I have noted personally increased number of incidents when I walk down the Ave of people asking me for cigarette papers.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, that's a change.
That's a change.
Well, you know, as Tip O'Neill said, all politics is local.
Yeah.
So that's hard for Canute. The people are trying to hit him up for zigzags. A couple things on that. As I've joked on this very show, if you couldn't get marijuana last year, maybe marijuana is not the drug for you, because it was not like it was not hard to get your hands on. So it is kind of a non-story. But I kind of feel like between that and the gay marriage stuff, it feels like this tipping point has happened with these things that, in my opinion, pose no real harm to society, but that we were just, a lot of us were against for some kind of, I think, moral holdover reasons. Mm. And you've just got enough people now, I think, younger people coming up and getting control of the levers of power, I guess, that something like marijuana and something like gay marriage, which again, I think just don't really pose any big threat to our society. We've now finally decided, okay, we're fine with that. And I think that's the trend across the country is reflecting that. And it's kind of cool to be around when a couple of those big social changes like that happen.
What's next in that trend, do you think?
Good
young
question.
Young people not bothered by X.
Well, I think a trend, it's young people bothered by, which would be, I think the Ferguson shooting and the sort of civil rights movement that's growing up around police behavior. I mean, you can say, Seattle could say, well, we were ahead of the curve because we were already under federal mandate to stop committing violence against minorities. A number of cities are wrestling with this issue. It's now become a big national story, not just what's happening in Seattle, but what's going on in New York City and other places. And I think it underscores the fact that Seattle has a problem that's part of a national problem. It's part of issue that's in cities all over. And we are starting to make progress on it here. But also, the politicians and the police department are having their feet held to the fire by protests that are taking place and that kind of thing. And I think it's largely driven by young people. Young people who don't want to live in the society where, African Americans in particular have made progress in some areas, but there are these systemic race issues that take place on the streets where people are literally being killed.
Most upsetting news story of 2014, I thought, was the Oso slide, because, and I thought, I've had discussions about this, that you can have awful school shootings and Walmart shootings and wildfires and other terrible things, but, and as I listen to, you know, the coverage on KUOW, you're hit by all the people, especially kids, but a lot of people who were not imagining that the ground could do this to them.
I had the exact same reaction, that Oso is the thing that just, bad verb here, but shook us, because the ground is supposed to be stable,
yeah,
right? It's not supposed to move. It's not supposed to slide down a hill into a river in a blink of an eye.
Not that it's never happened. That's the thing about it. We're in a slide prone area, but boy, do we love to forget that. And although it's good that we're more aware of erosion and logging and all this stuff, it's still disturbing.
Yeah. I thought that was, you know, the most troubling story. I mean, there were some good stories at Oso about how people helped each other, how the community came together. I managed to meet the mayor of Arlington and find how this community just rallied around each other. But just the most unnerving story to me was that one.
I think for me, the Marysville Pilchuck shooting was so tragic, not just because of the loss of life, but because of the really bizarre way in which it unfolded, the way that these kids were sort of invited to their, you know, their deaths, and also the social media component of it. I mean, if you went back and you read this kid's tweets, they were just so almost nihilistic, and a person who was obviously hurting. And to just think about the number of people in our state who have those feelings, whether they're young people or old people, there are a lot of people out there who have a lot of anger and hurt and don't really know how to process it. And to see it play out that way in such a young life, and then to see these other lives taken, and, you know, his family members and friends, that was just wave after wave of increasingly sad news out of that story.
And you would hope psychological, emotional intervention gets a boost from incidents like that, but I don't know where the evidence is of that. I hope so.
Well, in this case, this student just was not your average, and I hate to use that word average, but he didn't fit the prototype of someone who needed that kind of intervention. And so that's what surprised everyone. You know, he was homecoming prince or something, yeah. Something like that. Mm-hmm. Popular kid, not one of these sort of, you know, kids that was a loner and harbored all these feelings, you know, on the outside.
This is the KUOW's Week in Review with Joni Balter, Luke Burbank, Knute Berger, and I mentioned a helpful reminder from a listener a few minutes ago, and I want to remind you that's because we're live tweeting the show at KUOW. We're on Facebook, KUOW Public Radio. Listen, on a much lighter note, Knute, I looked back also at some of the stuff we talked about in 2014, and you had written about a new Seattle nickname, and I wondered whether you got any... I didn't warn you I was going to ask you about this. If you got any contributions that rose to the top. We're still working on that.
No, still working on that. The new nickname, what can we get beyond the Emerald City? But I did have one suggestion that I heard about this year was a sort of word-of-mouth, underground effort to simply change the name of Seattle to Self.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, that to kind of undo the injustice of the naming Seattle, you know, having changed Chief Seattle's name, Chief Self name, and kind of just slowly begin to like address envelopes or whatever with Self.
A stealth Self campaign.
Stealth Self campaign. And I thought that was a very intriguing idea.
Yeah. And eventually we'd have to start pronouncing it closer to right, though.
Yeah, right. And I'm not going to even try to pronounce it. That's one reason it got anglicized was because the glottal
right
stops.
But they're loving that in Spokane, right, with the baseball team there on the res. And it's now there. It's on their uniforms. It says Spokane.
Right.
And they're pronouncing it that way. And there's no kind of nativist, you know, what are they doing? It's, because it's even more local. It's even more real and historically true of that area.
Yeah, and the argument's gone on for years about what Mount Rainier should really be named, whether it's Tahoma or Rainier and the kind of thing. We have the Salish Sea now, which wasn't renaming anything. It was naming an entity that didn't have a name. But, that's out there. People are talking and thinking about it.
Other 2014 notes before we take a break?
One that I wanted to try to squeeze in is back to the policing stuff. I think this body cam story is going to be huge. It's not yet because you have like the police officers who I assume are squeaky clean. They volunteered to wear the cameras.
Right.
So, you know, I'm going to assume and the Seattle Police Department, droll as they always are, you know, released the footage a couple weeks ago that they said was like scintillating or something, which was a joke because it was so boring.
Right.
But I think over time...
Public disclosure request this.
Yeah, exactly. We're going to kill you with boringness.
Mm-hmm.
These videos are unwatchable. But I think that as this program hopefully expands, I don't think it's a panacea. You know, I don't think that body cams are the answer to every problem. But if you look at other cities where body cams have been instituted, you know, the complaints about police brutality go down by these incredible numbers. And it's because I think, one, people know they can't get away with false claims as easily. And two, I think that the law enforcement people probably play it a little bit more by the book because they know it's being monitored. So I really look forward to an era where most of the police, if not all the police, are wearing body cams.
Those body cams are being tested out right now, and so that's going to be part of 2015. We're going to talk more about what's coming up in the new year, including it's time to play Will They Matter This Year Like They Did Last Year, coming up after a break on KUOW's Week in Review. You're about 9 hours away from Luke Burbank and Public Radio's Live Wire here on KUOW, unless you're listening to us via podcast, which I highly recommend. I just do that. I listen back to the show again. I've already heard it, but I have it all podcast to go to KUOW.org and podcast, you know, the record.
Just do that podcast.
Yeah, do that thing.
Yeah.
Wait, you re-listen to Weekend Review?
Yes, I do. It's that good. It's that good.
I re-listen sometimes. I think I say it's because I want to make sure that the audio, you know, was recorded right.
Yeah.
But there's nothing more embarrassing than having your wife walk into the living room as you're listening to yourself on a radio broadcast. It's not a good thing.
You're with the self-regard of Bill Radke and Luke Burbank and the much more well-adjusted Knute Berger and Joni Balter on the Week in Review. And it's time to play Will They Matter this year like they did last year. And we're going to get to Macklemore in a moment. But for the Seattle Seahawks, it looks like, yeah, they might actually be a big deal again in 2015. And the same can very possibly be said for the Seattle Mariners. This surely is a sign of the end times. The Seahawks and Mariners shall reign, Archangel's call, sound of God's trumpet, and the Husky basketball team wins the Pac-12 in that order, if I have my scripture correctly.
The good news, though, is that if the demons rise up, maybe it'll shake Bertha loose. I mean, so silver lining.
Wait a minute. Best fake headline is Seattle trades Bertha to San Francisco and Marshawn Lynch finishes the tunnel.
Nice. I'm going to start it on Beastquake. Beastquake would be dangerous.
My fantasy for 2015 is when they get that rescue pit dug, that Bertha escapes. You know, she's just, I don't want to be down here doing this.
I've had
never asked for this.
It kind of Godzilla-like, rises out of the pit, you know, tears down the viaduct and goes on a tear through the city.
But let's linger on sports for just a moment, because Luke, you were saying in 2014, the biggest deal was you can't get around. And we can talk about legislative sessions and stuff, and we will. But the feeling in 2014, how it affected your daily life, whether you were irritated or overjoyed or whatever, you know, it was a big deal to have the Seahawks so good. And it could be them again, and it could be the Mariners. Luke, how are you feeling about that?
Well, I'm really excited about the Mariners, believe it or not, because baseball is kind of like a soap opera. If you put in the time to learn who everybody is throughout the season, then you kind of, you know, it's quite fascinating. But if you miss out on the plot points, you know, you just try to tune into a game in August, it's just like, who are these guys? So I really followed the Mariners last year. And so the fact that they've picked up this guy named Nelson Cruz, who was the biggest home run hitter in, I believe, all of baseball last year, that's a big thing, because it just means that they're going to have really good pitching and really good hitting. So that excites me. But in the Seahawk thing, I'm excited, but also not sure how to feel, because it's one thing to finally win the Super Bowl. That's got all kinds of emotions attached to it for me. But then to be now Vegas's favorite to go back and win it again, is it's just the insecure Seattleite in me, excuse me, the insecure self-lite in me. Mm-hmm. Is just, I don't know how to handle that kind of success if that happens.
Wasn't part of the outrage after the Super Bowl victory was that at the beginning of the season, Seattle was not picked to win, and then you get into this, they're all against us.
But here's what Luke is suffering from, and from my conversations with you, Bill, just you have a touch of this, is the whole expectation thing. So last year, you know, no one's going to pick us. We're not going to do it. They underappreciate us. And then we go on to this amazing victory, which is wonderful, and everybody loved it. And now we kind of admit it. Come on, admit it. You kind of expect it. You kind of think, of course they're going to do it. I mean, just look at the specs on this team. You know?
Specs.
I like that.
Knute, I haven't heard from you yet.
Well, so first of all, I think that Luke's comment about baseball being a soap opera is like the most brilliant analogy I've ever heard. That's exactly what it is. And it's really hard to get people to sort of say, you know, 20 years.
So wait a minute.
You got to watch all my children, you know, and understand what's going on.
So wait, he wasn't good, and then he put human growth hormone in his body, and then it's like, does that change? Is it the same actor playing him now?
Or is his twin is back?
Yeah, it's
dead?
Like, this is like Aaron Six, you know. And what, anyway, it's I just thought that was brilliant and exactly kind of what being a baseball fan, at least in Seattle, is like. And then, you know, as far as the Seahawks, the Seattle insecurity kicks in because we believe everyone's against us, so we're suspicious about having our luck hold out. The team works really hard to motivate itself by turning itself into an underdog.
Yes.
So, and they did that this year in a whole lot of ways. The fans do it. The sports radio guys do it. Everybody does it. But I have to say, when they were 3-3, six games into the season, I didn't think they were going to go back to the Super Bowl.
Comments on the locker room wall, Knute.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Knute's got doubts. So I think for a lot of fans, a lot of, you know, people who are really into it, they have been through a kind of roller coaster ride. And the fact that the Seahawks seem well poised in the playoffs is not something we take for granted. And somebody said about Marshawn Lynch, enjoy this while you can. I really think that's the thing, is that they're playing really well. Enjoy it while you can. And remember the Mariners had a great run. They didn't go to the World Series, but they had a great run, and then 10 years of hell. So, you know, the same thing can happen in football. It's just, we just need to enjoy it while we can.
I like that we brought it back to Scripture. Final word, Luke Burbank.
Well, my hope is that if we do go deep into the playoffs this year, I'm talking about the Seahawks now, and if maybe win the Super Bowl again, the impact that we'll have on Seahawk fan nation, the so-called 12s, will be that we will learn how to be maybe a little bit more gracious. I think last year we were like an ethnic minority that was in a country that suddenly got a hold of power, mm-hmm. like when we won the Super Bowl, because I've been around a lot of Seahawk fans and I've went to a lot of games in the last couple of years, and it's like we didn't always, our fan base, handle success well. We kind of really used it as a way to rub it in with other teams. I saw Green Bay fans crying a couple seasons ago after the so-called Fail Mary play, which happened in Seattle.
Yep.
So I'm hoping that once it becomes a regular thing that we actually are a good team, that we'll start to become – like Tom Landry, the coach of the Dallas Cowboys, said, when you get to the end zone, act like you've been there before. So maybe we can do that as a fan base.
By the way, Huskies, University of Washington, tonight – Cactus Bowl in Arizona.
Yes.
Just the word cactus.
The enthusiasm
bowl.
In yes. your voice says everything.
Okay. That's Seahawks and Mariners. Will McLemore still matter at the end of 2015? Critics call McLemore corny, and we can talk more about what that means if you want. But he got some buzz this week when he was on the New York radio station Hot 97 saying he's so successful in part because of his race.
Why am I safe? Why can I cuss on a record, have a parental advisory sticker on the cover of my album, yet parents are still like, you're the only rap I let my kids listen to?
Yeah, we have that talk all the time.
Why can I wear a hoodie and not be labeled a thug? Why can I sag my pants and not be a gangbanger? Why am I on Ellen's couch? Why am I on Good Morning America? If I was black, what would my drug addiction look like?
The nasty past of McLemore.
it would be twisted into something else versus maybe like, you know, get back on your feet. Like,
right,
you know,
a warm story.
Yeah, exactly.
He got himself back.
Exactly.
First of all, anyone disagree with McLemore?
No, I think he's super self-aware.
Highly self-aware.
And I read the transcript of this interview, and I mean, I think he answered everything really accurately and in a really self-aware, sort of self-deprecating way. He sounds like a great guy to run some kind of community organization program, maybe less with the rap music, more with the
You're not a McLemore fan.
Wait a minute.
Explain. Yes, Joni.
He's getting involved with the Duwamish cleanup. I mean,
yeah.
He's trying to branch out a little bit. The thing I was most upset to hear in there is that he is still sagging his pants. That is, what, 15 years of really bad fashion there, and it has to continue?
Luke, do you want to explain the corniness, the anti-McLemore rap?
I think that, you know, there is a certain number of us who like hip hop music who thought it was kind of cool for Macklemore because he's such a nice guy and he's been around the scene for a long time. It's great to see him do well. If anybody's going to be successful, I'm happy it's him. But for me personally, I'm just talking for me, it's not hip hop music that I find particularly interesting or invigorating. And it's part of why when he won a Grammy instead of a guy named Kendrick Lamar, who makes stuff that people like me think of as being more edgy and cool. Macklemore tweeted, or rather texted it to Kendrick Lamar, "You got robbed."
Yeah.
But then he tweeted a screenshot of his phone, and then he got in trouble for doing that.
That's part of the knock, right, is that he's a little self-congratulatory. You know, thrift shop is about that I'm keeping it real and going to a secondhand store, and it's also sort of kiddie rap. And then Same Love, great beloved song, great song, brings tears to my eyes. The rap is, you know, there is, because it's a part of it is about hip hop's relationship to homosexuality, and there is a history to black male identity issues, and you know, going back to slavery, and it's like, is he rapping about stuff that he doesn't know about? So my question to you is, in 2015, is he a blip or does he impress us?
Well, certainly not a blip. And don't forget, he was very tied to the Seahawks last year as they, you know, like he was singing it at halftime at the Super Bowl.
But isn't that kind of corny? I mean, Jay-Z is corny to me, too.
Well, corny, but part of us, right?
Yeah, part of us.
Yeah. That doesn't mean
I think he'll
like
still
corny.
Be relevant.
Yeah.
Ryan Lewis, you got to remember, Ryan Lewis, the producer of all of those songs, is really genius, I think. I mean, the production. And I don't think there's any reason to think that the combination of Ryan Lewis and Macklemore can't crank out a few more hits in the coming year. I mean, it seems very possible to me.
They can't hold us if we keep using honking saxophones. Well, we'll know. We'll know in a year. Back on with more newsy news, new laws in 2015, and what the new year might hold for us, coming up on KUOW's Week in Review.
Here we go back, this is a moment, tonight is a night, we fight till it's over, so we put our hands up like the ceiling can hold us, like the ceiling can hold us. Return to the Mac, get up what it is, what it does, what it is, what it isn't, looking for a better way to get up out of bed instead of getting on the internet and checking it and hit me, get up, thrift shop, pimp shop, walking, little bit of humble, little bit of cautious, somewhere between.
Hey, UW's Week in Review, Joni Balter's rapping there, by the way. Knute Berger.
Why don't they make the roofs better and the ceilings better?
They should be able to hold us.
The roof is on fire, the ceiling can't hold us.
Yeah.
Get OSHA out there, or whoever is in charge of that. It's dangerous.
Couple of new laws to review for you here in 2015. You are required to separate food waste from garbage now. Scoff laws will be fined later in the year. Some of the compostables are scheduled to be sent to a processor in Eastern Washington and spread on the farm field. So you should feel good about that.
Can I just be difficult here for a moment and ask you, really, and I've asked this before, who is actually going to open the garbage bags? So you pretty much need like a chicken leg sticking through, breaking the plastic.
It's a job creator, Joni.
No, it isn't, because they said they're not going to hire anybody for this.
Oh.
So there.
How about they take those things out of the TSA that we have to stand in and get radiated by mm-hmm. and just run all the garbage through them, and then they'll be able to see what's in there.
Yeah. Do you really want your waste stream, a phrase I've never used before, by the way, do we want people who are angry about being fined to be the ones who decide what they're going to chuck into their compostable bin?
I'm not sure I even followed that.
English version, please.
English version is, I got your compost. You know, you want me to put more stuff in my bin? You know,
waste stream.
Waste stream. Annoyed people were capable of so much. Another law that goes into effect this year, a minimum wage in the state goes to $9.47 an hour from $9.32. We're the highest of any state in the country.
And then on April 1st, and that's a funny day, of course, Seattle's minimum wage goes, what, to $11 for a certain category?
10 or 11, depending on how big a business you are.
There you go.
Yeah. And federal minimum wage, by the way, is $7.25, and there's going to be 29 states plus District of Columbia with higher minimum wage rates than the federal rate. And some people say, oh, that's going to put pressure on Congress to raise the federal minimum wage. Other people say, no, that'll take pressure off Congress to raise the minimum wage. Like, you do it, states.
And unlike hiring more garbage inspectors, the city has created an office that will be overseeing the implementation of the $15 an hour wage over time.
Mm-hmm. So
I'm excited to see what it looks like, by the way. And I don't want to sound like I'm – my dad's a small business owner, was in Seattle for a long time. I'm not trying to act as if it's not a real concern for some companies, but – like my feeling is after this minimum wage is raised and as we move closer to the $15 in King County, I don't think we're going to walk out on the street and it's going to be like Back to the Future 3 where everything's just burned out and there's like newspapers blowing down the middle of Main Street. Something tells me there will still be stores and companies and businesses in Seattle even when it gets to $15 an hour.
But you know, we can never settle this question about whether it took away some jobs, because this happens every time, right? Like, well, it would have been worse without that measure. It would have been better without that measure, and it'll never be. No one will be persuaded by how things actually turn out in Seattle, will they?
Well, that's why it's fortuitous that this happened at a boom time in Seattle. You're going to go up that much.
It'll look good.
And it's going to end up looking good just because the city is booming economically right now, so there won't be a way to kind of really catch that. There's heavy competition and things like that.
We asked you on KUW Public Radio, to help us write some News Year's resolutions. You hear that, what we did there? News Year's resolutions. What do you want KUW to cover more in 2015? Angela said, education, how it's funded, how it's structured, what voters can change. Angela, you will love 2015 because this is the issue in the legislature, right? That and tax increases?
Both are pretty heavy duty.
Yeah. And in education, you can't really have one without the other, I think, for all practical purposes. But you're going to have trouble raising the money.
Bill, I could have saved you some time on that poll you did. The more important a topic is, the more it actually impacts our lives and our future.
Yes.
The less I want to hear you covering it in the news. I mean, if I'm just talking about from an entertainment standpoint.
Got it. I have my marching orders. Speaking of entertainment, Luke, you're on again at 8 o'clock tonight on Live Wire. And I don't always say this, but it's always a good show. It sounds exceptionally good this time around. Luke Burbank, Joni Balter, Knute Berger, and get with us in Seattle's Pioneer Square neighborhood for a live broadcast a week from now. We're going to be on the waterfront talking the waterfront. Final words, Joni, Knute?
Happy 2015. It's going to be a fun one.
Yeah, I'm optimistic.
Producer Jason Pagano, I'm optimistic because you produced this show. Thank you. Thank you for tuning in. KUW's Week in Review.